Welcome to another midweek lesson from Grace Christian Assembly. We are currently studying the book of Genesis, so open your Bible and join us as we dig into the Word. Now, here's our teacher, Jim McLarty.
We are in Genesis 29 this evening. After Jacob has stolen his brother's birthright, and then through chicanery got his brother's blessing, God showed up and confirmed to him that the Abrahamic covenant belonged to him, that the land belonged to him, the land of Canaan. Through him, all the families of the earth were going to be blessed, that he was going to have descendants like the stars of the heaven and sands of the seas. So the whole of the Abrahamic covenant passed down to the next generation to Isaac, which we certainly expected, because in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And then Isaac was tricked into giving it to Jacob, and yet exactly as God predicted, while there were still babies in the womb, that the older was going to serve the younger. Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. And Jacob ends up with the birthright promise. The last time we saw Jacob, he had left his mom and dad, fleeing from his brother Esau, who was angry at him and threatening to kill him. And so he took off for Laban. He took off for the area of Ur of the Chaldees, where Abraham had come from in the first place. And he's on his way going looking for a wife. And really between chapter 29 and chapter 36, the next part of Genesis is really just the narrative about these two boys, Jacob and Esau. First, Jacob going after his wives, dealing with Laban, since he went through all this heel-catcher chicanery. Jacob did, since he supplanted his brother, since through trickery he ended up getting what rightfully belonged to his brother. Now he's going to get a little bit of payback. You're going to see God's hand of justice kind of play out here, and he's going to have to deal for the next 20 years with Laban, who's going to put him through some trickery. So there is this great cosmic payback going on here. So for the next seven chapters, we're really going to be looking at a lot of narrative, not a lot of theology. Certainly you see God's hand moving in all these things, but we're going to see the progenitors, the 12 tribes introduced tonight. The 12 descendants of Jacob who become the leaders, the forefathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. So that's kind of where we're headed tonight. I've often thought that this particular story, just the story of Jacob running from his brother, going to Laban, and then the Rachel and Leah story that we're going to see tonight, and then the 12 children, and then returning to confront his brother, I just always thought this would make a great movie. Talk about a perfectly written drama. Starting at chapter 29, verse 1. Then Jacob went on his journey, and he came to the land of the sons of the east. And he looked, and he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep were lying there beside it. For from that well they watered the flocks. There was a stone on the mouth of the well, and it was large. And when all the flocks were gathered there, they would roll the stone from the mouth of the well, and they would water the sheep, and they would put the stone back in its place on the mouth of the well. So this is apparently a naturally occurring well or something that they dug to find a stream, and then they mark it with this stone, but also by putting the stone over it, they can protect the water underneath it. And so when Jacob sees it, he recognizes this is a watering hole, and there are flocks there. So in other words, he has found some people. So this is good. He's found some animals that belong to somebody, and he's going to figure out who they are. So in verse 4, Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We do know him." And he said to them, "Is it well with him?" And they said, "It is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep." Rachel apparently is a beautiful girl. And actually, the Hebrew pronunciation of it was probably closer to Rachel, but we're going to call her Rachel because I don't have enough phlegm to say Rachel all night. So we're just going to go with Rachel. And her name, by the way, Rachel, probably means a small sheep or a small lamb. It's a sweet name. It's a name that denotes a sweet young girl. And so, behold, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. And he said, "Behold, it is still high day. it is not time for the livestock to be gathered. Water the sheep, and then go and pasture them. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered, and they roll the stone from the mouth of the well, then we water the sheep. So there have to be enough men gathered together with enough of the flocks that the men collectively can move the rock, and then they water the sheep. So they've started this midday gathering. And when he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came about, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went up and rolled the stone from the mouth of the well and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted his voice and wept. This kiss would have been a familial kiss. This was not a romantic kiss. He didn't grab her and pull a Pepe Le Pew on her. It wasn't, you know. He kissed her in a familial way, saying, oh, we're family. Then Jacob kissed Rachel, lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. So it came about, when Laban heard the news of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house, and then he related to Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and of my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? So this tells us that for that month that he stayed there, he didn't just hang around. He went out every day and got productive. He probably went out with the flocks. He probably helped with the watering and the herding. And so Laban says, well, you're not going to work for nothing. What would you like? Tell me what your wage will be. So verse 15, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wage be? Now Laban had two daughters, and the name of the older was Leah, which is just an interesting name because the Hebrew word Leah means to be weary or to make someone disgusted. Yeah. So, gee, Laban and wife, what would you like to name your first daughter? I'm thinking make someone disgusted. Isn't it an odd thing to name her? And yet you're going to see that her name is going to play out quite specifically in the way that her father is going to treat her and the way she's going to end up married through a bit of chicanery. And sure enough, her husband's going to end up disgusted. And yet, God named her that as a child, made sure that ended up being her name. So the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and beautiful of face. Now, Jacob loved Rachel, so he said to Laban, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. I find this really interesting, very typical of Middle Eastern culture, that you would have to have some kind of proof that you'd be a good provider. He shows up there with nothing but a staff and says, I'd like to marry your daughter. Chances are Laban's going to say, no, you've got nothing. You're not a wealthy man. How are you going to take care of her? How are you going to provide for children? So he says, how about this? I'll work for you for 7 years. At the end of 7 years, I will have accumulated some flocks of my own. I'll be able to provide for a wife and kids. So in 7 years, I expect her as a wife. Yes?
Well, wasn't what he asked inappropriate? Because Leah's not married, and to ask the younger daughter is an affront.
Yes, and that's where the problem's going to be. But it says right there that when he looked at Leah, Leah was apparently a... In some of your different translations there, we'll describe
Leah.
Her eyes were weak. That her eyes were weak, as some of them...
Delicate.
Some of them say delicate. Yeah, exactly. And so it could have been a comment on personality, but since the contrast was that her sister was really fair to look at, that phrase, her eyes were weak, may have been that she was weak on the eyes. Nobody really knows whether this was a comment that she was not that attractive looking when compared to her younger sister, which seems to be the case since he skipped right over the older and went after the younger. So she's the good looking one, I want her. And then, of course, Laban's going to correct him 7 years later for the mistake of asking for the younger one.
Yeah, mine says that weak means pale.
Pale,
yeah. Most of the people had the the really dark eyes, but she had pale eyes.
Mm-hmm. There was something about her that made her less desirable than her younger sister. And Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for the younger daughter Rachel. Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man, so stay here with me. So he agrees to it. Now, as you just pointed out, he's going to want Leah, his eldest daughter, to be married first. And it could be that he thought, well, I've got 7 years to get her married off. That's a possibility. But at very least, Laban seems to already be up to his tricks. Verse 20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Every day that he worked, he saw it as another day closer to getting to marry the girl he loved. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go in unto her. That's an English phrase that is a Jewish colloquialism. And the way that a marriage was consummated was for the man and woman to go into the tent together and have their sexual union for the first time. That phrase tells you that for 7 years he worked with her, and yet she was still a virgin. He didn't try to lay with her. He didn't try to go in ahead of his time. He was a very honorable man. And finally, the day came when he should have been able to take her to wife. And so he said, the time's complete. Give me my wife that I can go in unto her. So Laban gathered all the men of the place, and he made a big feast. Now it came about in the evening that he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Now the way this would have worked was that the bride would have gone into the tent first, and she would have prepared herself, and it would have been dark in the tent. She would have had a veil on, and she would have, appropriate robes on, so that when he came in, he would be enticed. And so Dad sent Leah, the oldest girl, in first, and said, go in there and make yourself ready. She apparently cooperated. She goes in and gets herself ready for the wedding night, and then at the end of the feast, and it's night, and there's been drinking, and okay, Jacob, your wife's waiting for you in the tent, and he hurries on in there, and 7 years of waiting. I mean, he's got some tension built up. And so he's...
They have candles.
Exactly, yeah. So in he goes, and they have an evening. I think after 7 years, there's no way that she didn't know, but she obviously was really obedient to her father, as most girls would have been, because the father owns everything, and it's up to the father to plan the wedding, who you're going to marry. And so I think that he probably took her aside at some point and said, Leah's the oldest, and you don't get married till she gets married. So Laban also gave his maid, Zilpah, to his daughter Leah as a maid. Oh, that's an interesting name. It means to trickle like a fragrant dropping. That's a nice name, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And so it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah, which means that Jacob woke up, rolled over, took a look at the woman he'd married, and went, you're not her.
And you're not very easy on the eyes.
And you're not easy on the eyes, yeah. And you're this one. Yes. And he said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why then have you deceived me? But Laban said, it is not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. So 7 years... And now Dad goes, make it 14. You got my older daughter, but if you want the younger one, the one you really love, it's going to take you another 7 years. Now, by the way, take a look at the language in verse 27, because most of your translations will use the word week at the beginning of that sentence. Complete the week of this one, and in the very same sentence, end with, you'll serve with me for another 7 years. There you see that synonymous terminology between week and 7 years, so that when you get to places like the book of Daniel, which we spent a lot of time in, and you read about the 70 weeks and 70 weeks of years and 70s times 7, there are folks who have written commentaries on Daniel and tried to say, well, it says week, and clearly week means week, without giving any thought to the way that the language has developed over time. The word just means sevens. And so A7 translated in the English into a week but then clearly stated as 7 years here. So he served for 7 years. He ended up with Leah. He's got to serve another 7 in order to get Rachel, the one he loves. So Jacob did so, and he completed her week, or her 7 years. And he gave him his daughter, Rachel, as his wife. 14 years this guy labored to finally get the woman he wanted. That's love. How many of you guys are that committed? Okay. I'm going to go with not Tom. Verse 28. And Jacob did so and completed her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel to wife, and Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. Bilhah, interesting name, means timid, quiet. That takes us to verse 30. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. This is another one of those examples of God's great balance in things. I mean, this is heel catcher after all. This is Jacob after all, the one who got the blessing and the birthright through lying and chicanery and supplanting his own brother. So now he ends up with Leah, the one he didn't necessarily want, but he is, after all, married to her. And so his being disgusted with Leah, God's going to correct it by making sure that Leah gives him children. Because in that culture, to have a son is the whole point and purpose of being married. To have somebody to carry on the lineage. To have somebody that can carry on the family name. And so God very specifically closed Rachel's womb and opened Leah's in anticipation that it would cause Jacob to love Leah. The sad part is that for a very long time it didn't work. Jacob was quite hard-hearted in all of this. So verse 32. And Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. So she recognizes that the Lord sees the affliction she's living under, that her husband doesn't love her. And the name Reuben, by the way, you can see the B-E-N at the end of it. Ben means son. The most famous example of that would be Ben-Hur. Judah, Ben-Hur, Judah, son of Hur. So Ben means son, and Reuben means literally, see, a son. And so it's Leah's way, when the child is born, of saying to her husband, see, a son. You'll love me now, right? So she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son. And by the way, all this conceiving going on means despite her not liking her, he's spending time in her tent. So she conceived again, and she bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon, or the Hebrew would be more like Shimon, and it means to hear. God has heard that I am unloved, has seen all this that's going on. So she called him to hear. And she conceived again. This is the third son now. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. Therefore she called him Levi, which means to unite or to attach. You see how desperately this woman wanted her husband's approval and love. And with each new son, she even gives him a name that every time every time Jacob has to call any of these boys by name, it is a constant reminder of how desperately his wife wants his love. Did you have something?
That was really good. The reminder every time the kid, that's...
Thank you. I plagiarized it from the text. And she conceived again, verse 35, and bore a son. And she said, this time I will praise the Lord. And therefore she named him, Judah is the English phrase, it's Yehuda. And Yehuda means celebrate, praise. So at the fourth child, she thinks, boy, I've done everything this man could want. 4 sons. there's no way that his heritage is going to stop now. And she decided that instead of reminding her husband with each new child of how desperately she wanted to be loved, she went with, you know what, this time we're just going to celebrate. This time we're just going to praise. And so Yehuda. And it's not insignificant that Jesus comes through that lineage. And he becomes known as the Lion of the tribe of Judah, Yehuda. Chapter 30 then starts. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister. And she said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die," as if it was his fault. And he quite rightly, in verse 2, then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Notice that Jacob instantly went right to God's sovereignty. Said, if you haven't had children, that's God's doing. If she's had four children, that's God's doing. Because it clearly wasn't his problem. He was fertile, he was producing, and she wasn't. So he said, it's God that's closed your womb. Yes, ma'am.
But he didn't mention God's sovereignty until he said his wife.
Yeah, well.
Yes. Way of looking at life.
Yes, and I do think that the knowledge of God's sovereignty in your life is a progressive recognition. It's something you recognize over time and circumstance and events of life. Yes.
And after you've done your own thing.
After you've worn yourself out, you go, oh, okay, God's sovereign. So she comes up with a plan. This is very much like Abraham going into the tent with Hagar. She was so desperate to have a child in order to gain her husband's approval. She said, let's do this. Here is my maid, Bilhah. Go in to her that she may bear a child on my knees, that through her I too may have children. So the idea was that if Bilhah got pregnant, when the time came to deliver, she would actually sit on Rachel's lap and then give birth. And that child, since she owned the slave to begin with, that child would be technically hers. Verse 4. So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went in to her. This is now three women he has gone in unto. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, God has vindicated me, and has indeed heard my voice, and has given me a son. Therefore she named him Dan, or Don, depending on the pronunciation, and it means judge. So she says, God indeed has heard my voice. He has vindicated me. So she's saying God is the judge who has evened these things out and named him Dan. Verse 7, and Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed. And she named him Naphtali, Naphtali, something like that, and it means to wrestle or to struggle. Now, this struggle and this desperation to produce sons to try to get Jacob's love and to try to even the score between these two competing sisters is ultimately going to cost Rachel her life. Rachel is going to die in childbirth, delivering the 12th of these boys. So, as you see this competition, this struggle, by the time they get to naming the child, struggle, this battle between me and my sister. She is so caught up in this competition with her sister and the disdain that runs between them that it is going to cost her life eventually. So Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed, and she named him Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, Leah reached the point where she was producing no more children. She took her maid, Zilpah, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Like, oh yeah, you think the score is even? I'll show you. So far, your children have been produced through a handmaid, so now I'll give our husband my handmaid and see if we can't tilt the score my way. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her maid, Zilpah, gave it to Jacob as a wife. Leah's maid, Zilpah, bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, how fortunate. And so she named him Gad. Gad is an interesting word because it means a troop or a large crowd. So now there's so many boys that you can see that the offspring of Isaac are starting to become a troop, a huge gathering of people. If all these boys also take multiple wives and also produce, you can see the beginning of God's promise that they were going to become like the stars of the heavens, the sands of the seas. They were going to become a huge people group. So she names him Gad, a troop. Yeah.
Oddly enough, in King James Version that I have here, it says that Gad means fortune. I mean, I can see your explanation much better, but I don't know why they got that there like that.
You've got fortune too?
Good fortune.
Mine says good fortune.
Literally troop for fortune.
It makes sense, and she said, and the different translations have how fortunate. But that word Gad is actually used in other places as a noun describing a large troop of people. And it makes sense with all the boys that there are now gathering here. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, "Happy am I, for women shall call me happy." So she named him Asher, which in fact means happy. Kind of like Isaac, which means laughter. So you got these particular people whose names are these heavy names. Judge. Or wrestling. And then you have these people hanging around like, "Hi, I'm happy." Sneezy, grumpy, dopey. Yeah.
Little guy.
Little guy. Big hat. "Women will call me happy," so she named him Happy, Asher. And in the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. But Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." Now, this will seem like a very odd story for Moses to include unless you understand that what they're talking about here is an aphrodisiac. And Leah had stopped bearing, and so she had given up her handmaid to produce children. And so it appears that her husband was not spending the amount of time with her that he used to. And so her eldest son, Reuben, is out in the field and comes across this plant that can be used as an aphrodisiac to try to get Jacob interested in her again. That's the subtext of the story. So he brought them to his mother Leah, and Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." And she said to her, look how cold this is between two sisters. And she said to her, "Is it a small matter for you to take my husband?" So Leah said, "I got married first. That's my husband. You were the late arriver to this party. Is it a small matter for you to take my husband, and would you take my son's mandrakes also? The very thing that's going to excite Jacob to come into the tent with us?" So Rachel said, "Therefore, he may lay with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes." So Rachel, being the loved one, knew that she could convince Jacob to go into Leah's tent, in exchange for which I get the aphrodisiac so that I'm going to get Jacob later. So they're all making deals and bartering to try to get Jacob to come lay with them so that they can produce a son. So when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, then Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in unto me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." So he laid with her that night. The Bible's an earthy book, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I know there are a lot of folk out there who work real hard to clean up the Bible, who just can't imagine that God would talk about things like men laying with women with aphrodisiacs. But that's exactly what this passage is about, because God is dealing with human beings like you and I, with the same passions you and I have, with the same fleshly, sinful natures that you and I have. Those have always been the people that God has dealt with and chosen and elected and loved. Folks who have the same yearnings and desires that we have. And in fact, sometimes he gets so earthy in his book, because you got to understand, the things that we, how shall I put this delicately, the things that we do in our most private moments, all by ourselves with the doors closed, God's still there. God's very aware that he made your body to function exactly that way, to go through all those things.
Can you make up fairy tales and tell their children?
No fairy tales. This is the God who sees everything, who made you exactly this way, and he's very willing to admit that we are just fleshly people. So Jacob came in from the field in the evening. Leah went and said to him, hey, I bought you. That's basically it. I purchased you. You have to come into me tonight because I hired you with my son's mandrakes. So he laid with her that night. And God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived, and she bore Jacob the fifth son. Then Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my maid to my husband. So she named him Issachar, which means he will bring a reward. So Issachar, I've been rewarded. He will bring a reward. I gave my handmaid because I thought I was past bearing. I gave up my handmaid to my husband. Now God's rewarded me with another son. And Leah conceived again, verse 19, and bore a sixth son to Jacob. Now all this time, have you seen Rachel produce a child? Nothing. The handmaids have both produced. Leah's up to six. Rachel, the one he loved and worked 14 years for, has yet to produce a child.
Leah knows where the mandrakes are.
But she knows where the mandrakes are. She's got them hidden in her tent. She's waiting for her moment. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah. And Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good gift, and now my husband will live with me, because I have borne him six sons. So she named him Zebulun, which means a habitation. Look, six sons, what more do you want from me? Six sons, now you'll come and live with me. You know, you'll ignore my sister who has not given you any children, and we will now grow and be a family, and Rachel just won't be any part of this. I've given you six sons. What more do you want? After that, verse 21, she also bore a daughter, Dinah. Dinah is actually the feminine form of Dawn, which is the root of Dan. So it's sort of the feminine form of Dan or judgment. And God, look, verse 22, after all this, after all these children, after the handmaids, after all this, then God remembered Rachel. Now, this is really fascinating because the same way that we've seen God close other wombs and wait until people were well past childbearing so that they would always recognize that it was God's providential hand that was doing these things. He has all these boys. Jacob has all these sons. And he's got a daughter, Dinah. And they're all later in life going to die were it not for the next son that's going to be born to the one he loved, Rachel. It's going to be this young one, Joseph, that is going to be the one that God raises up to prominence. And it's going to be Joseph who's going to end up second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. And it's going to be Joseph that God uses in order to conserve the whole family alive. In fact, you know the story, so I'm jumping ahead a little bit here. But all the rest of the boys, who all have this resentment toward Rachel's son, because dad is going to love Joseph more than all the other boys because it's Rachel's son, the one he loved, the one he wanted in the first place. And he's going to favor Joseph until all the other brothers hate him. And later when they end up standing in front of him, after all the evil they're going to do to him, he's going to make that grand statement, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save many people alive. So God has providentially held off. And through all these years, Rachel's had all this heartache and all this pain of not bearing a child and having her sister resent her and having her husband be disappointed in her. And then she's going to produce the one late in life that is going to save the whole rest of the lineage. God knows what he's doing. So God remembered Rachel, verse 22. And God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son, and she said, God has taken away my reproach. And she named him Yosef, or Joseph, saying, may the Lord give me another son. And Joseph means, Yosef means add or augment. So now that she's gotten one, she was hoping for more. She wants to play a little bit of catch up. Well, because she's not satisfied with the one, later, like I told you, she's going to get pregnant again late in her life, and she's going to bear Benjamin, and she's going to die bearing Benjamin. she's going to name him the child of my suffering. And then her husband's going to rename him the child of my right hand. So these names all mean important things. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away, that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service, which I have tendered to you. But Laban said to him, if now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. So after all those years, Laban now is getting wealthier and more powerful as a result of Joseph being there. And now Joseph wants to go. Give me my wives, give me my children, give me what I've earned, and I'm going to go back to my homeland. Remember that when he was leaving Canaan and God met him in the way, that God specifically said, I'm bringing you back to this land. I've given this land to you and your descendants. So he has always been aware that he's headed back to Canaan eventually. And now that he's got 12 sons and a daughter and two maids and two wives, and it's now time to head back. But Laban realizes if you leave, all these blessings that have come my way are going to stop. So he wants one more time to try to keep him there, the same way he managed to keep him there 14 years just to get Rachel. Verse 28, and he continued, name your wages, and I'll give it to you. But he said to him, you yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came here, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. So since Laban has said, don't leave me, don't leave yet, I don't want to lose the blessings, he said, okay, if I stay and work, here's what I want you to do. And this is really clever. Verse 32, let me pass through your entire flock today, and let me remove from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one from among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats, and those will be my wages. Now the spotted and the speckled and the black lambs were the less desirable ones. They certainly would still produce food or produce wool, but the white wool can be dyed into more colors and stuff. The darker wool, the black wool, not as valuable. And so he says, let's just do this. I don't want you to give me anything other than I'm going to walk through and I will take the least desirable of your animals. And I will start my own flock with them. What we don't know that's going to be revealed later on by Moses is that it turns out that God came and met with him and gave him a vision that the goats and the sheep that were going to, how shall I say this, mount most voraciously were going to be the speckled and the dark, and those were going to be the strong ones. So God gave him a vision that the good ones in Laban's flock, the ones that were going to produce the most, were going to be the speckled and the spotted and the dark. So since he has that vision to work with, he goes to Laban and makes Laban a deal that sounds like, to Laban, a good deal. Let me take the ones that are less desirable. Turns out, those are going to be the ones that are the strongest, and he is even going to manipulate the breeding in such a way that he's going to end up owning the vast majority of what was once Laban's flock. Laban made a huge mistake by not letting him go home. So, let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one from among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats, and that will be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later, when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats, everyone that is not black among the lambs, if it's found with me, will be considered stolen. So he said, I'm going to be upright with you. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to do exactly what I just said. If you agree to this deal, when the time comes for me to leave, if I have any in my flock that are not speckled or spotted or black-colored, then you can call me a thief. You can say that I stole them from you and take them back. And Laban said, well, good. Let it be according to your word. Because he thinks, I'm going to do fine. If he's going to continue to work here, I'm still going to get the blessings. I have flourished under his hand, and now my best animals are going to flourish under his hand. This sounds like a great deal to Laban. But what's heel catcher doing? Old supplanter's going to supplant Laban now. So he removed on that day the striped and the spotted male goats and all the speckled and the spotted female goats, every one that had white in it and all the black ones among the sheep, and he gave them under the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So he made a real clear division between the two flocks. These are mine over here, 3 days' journey, and these are yours over here. And I will see to it that I and my men take care of your flock, but it's going to be very clear what's mine and what's yours. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees, and he peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters or the feeding troughs, even in the watering troughs. And when the flocks came in to drink, they mated when they came to the drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped and speckled and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs, and he made the flocks face toward the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart, and he did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, it came about, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, that Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters so that they would mate by the rods. And when the flock was feeble, he did not put those sticks in, so that the feebler were Laban's and that the stronger were Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. So he was making himself rich off the back of Laban since Laban wouldn't let him go. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belongs to our father, he has made all his wealth. So now here are Laban's sons, his natural sons, who are seeing that Jacob, the son-in-law, has managed to manipulate everything Laban has to the degree where he's now rich. He's taken Laban's daughters, he's taken Laban's flocks, and of course the boys are waiting for the inheritance from Laban, which at one time was a significant inheritance and now seems to be waning very quickly. So they begin resenting Jacob. Verse 2, and Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as it had formerly been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So it's clearly time to go back. As he was on his way east, he was told by God, you're coming back to this land. Now that God has kept him there long enough for him to have his 12 sons and his daughters, then God made him rich and then said, now go back. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field, and he said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it is not toward me as it formerly was, but the God of my father has been with me, and you know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. So what he's saying here is God has providentially cared for us. Because you know, anybody here ever had kittens? Puppies? I don't mean you personally. Anybody here have an animal that ever produced an animal? You have absolutely no control over what type of kitties you get when two cats make kittens. Unless you've got purebred on both sides, then you're likely to get a pure breed. But you get your random kitty and your random male kitty and you put them together, there's no telling what you might get. The kittens that showed up last year that Megan helped rear up, the mother was Siamese, just Siamese as the day is long. I mean, like Disney Siamese. Like, we are Siamese if you play. It was that kind of Siamese. Were there any Siamese in the litter of 9 kittens? Not a one. They all came out tabby and all these different kind of cats. Not a Siamese in the group. So the point being, he is recognizing here, Jacob is recognizing here that he really couldn't control, despite his best efforts to make sure he had a strong flock, he couldn't control whether the animals were going to come out speckled or striped or whatever. But he said, listen, God paid attention. And whenever your father Laban would say, okay, you can have the speckled ones, God made sure that all the sheep that were born were speckled. And whenever he said, you can have the striped ones, God made sure they all came out striped. And so he's giving God the credit for everything that he has amassed to this point and said, I can't do that. I can't tell an animal, okay, only speckled this time, okay? Instead, he says, it was God that did it. God has enriched me, so we need to do what God has said. And God said, go back to the land that he has promised to my fathers, so it's time to go. And he's convincing his wives, it's time to pack up and leave. Yes?
Well, I have a question because it seems as though he's kind of invoking God post his own behavior. Mm-hmm. Because it's him kind of manipulating the circumstances or attempting to, although recognizably he's not sure that it would work, of course. But
I think that's typical of all of us, isn't it? That would be a yes laugh. Yeah.
That's what we call free will.
Yeah. Because I do think that we all put our best efforts forward toward accomplishing the things in life we would like to accomplish. And wherever you can find an advantage, you take it. You try to invest wisely. You try to not spend.
He's always this kind of sneaky thing.
Right. Well, isn't that God? And again, what I see here is what I just said, that progressive realization on Jacob's part, that he put in some effort, sure, but we all do. You try to raise your children up as best you can. But then in the end, if you've raised up children that are safe and intelligent and making good decisions, ultimately you got to recognize, well, that really was God. I did what I could do, but ultimately you can't tell animals whether or not to produce spotted babies, despite your best efforts. So I think that's what we're seeing here with Jacob, is that he's gone to his wives and said, look, we've got all this, and there's no way to explain it. As he's headed back to Canaan land, when it's time to enter the land, he's going to pause for a moment and say, I came east with nothing but a rod in my hand. I had nothing but a walking staff when I came this direction. And now here I am walking home with this enormous company of people and servants and animals and flocks. And he's going to recognize that's all God's doing. But yes, I think it is all him progressively realizing this is really God's hand. So verse 9, thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes. Look here, this is what I mentioned to you before. When the flocks were mating, I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped and speckled and mottled. In other words, God gave him a vision of which animals it was that were going to be productive. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped and speckled and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. So clearly God, like you said, working mysteriously behind the scenes, but he also made it clear to Jacob right up front, look, I've shown you what I'm going to do.
Told him what to ask for.
So he could go to Laban and say, yeah, give me the spotted and the speckled and the striped. Yeah, that'll be fine for my wages. When in fact, he'd already seen in a dream that those are the ones that were going to be productive. God already gave him the means to go and become rich. And so naturally then in speaking to his wives, he would say, it is God ultimately that did these things. And so verse 13, I am the God of Bethel where you anointed a pillar. This is very important because as he was leaving Canaan land, he stopped and laid his head on a stone and he saw a ladder ascending to heaven and he saw the angels of God ascending and descending on it. God was at the top of that ladder or that staircase, however that's described. And it was there that God gave him the promise, this is your land. This is the land I promised to your fathers. And so he set up a stone, and he called it Bethel, house of God. And he anointed that stone there, and he set it up as a pillar, as a mark. And he said, if I return to this stone, to Bethel, if God grants me wealth in my life, when I return here, I'll give God a tenth of everything. God didn't miss it. And says, by the way, I'm the God of Bethel. Now, yes, you're rich now. Yes, you've got plenty now. And I'm the God who you stopped and talked to at Bethel. And I have done exactly that. So notice that God paid attention to every word he said and is now holding him accountable for the words he said. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. It's time to go home. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said for you to do. So they're agreeing with their husband and saying, why would we stay with our father? We have no portion with our father. He's already sold us off to you. So yes, we'll go with you. Then Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels, and he drove away all of his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered at Padan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. And Laban had gone to shear the flock, and then Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose, and he crossed the Euphrates River, and he set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. And starting next week, we're going to see Laban realize he's been cheated, and he's going to be angry, and he's going to chase him. And once he finally makes peace with Laban, he's got to deal with Esau. And all of the things that heel catcher supplanter has done are going to start catching up with him now one by one. But on his way home, before he goes back and occupies the promised land, he's going to have to wrestle all night with a messenger of God. And it's going to change his walk. And before he gets to go back into the land and continue the promises of the Abrahamic covenant, just like we saw with Melchizedek, one more time, God is going to confirm everything he's doing through a Christophany. Because Christ is before all things and in all things and after all things. And again, you know, we've been talking so much about Israel and God's promises to Israel. And I keep saying Israel's promises will be kept by God and they'll be kept in Christ. I also am trying to establish that those promises were made in Christ. Because Christ will ultimately get the glory in everything God has done. So next week we're going to bump into yet another book of Genesis, Christophany. Got all that? Isn't that a great story? That would just make an excellent movie. Heartache, and we haven't even gotten to Benjamin being born yet. And all the intrigue and the father-son fighting and which wife you get. There's just so much intrigue, and God is so earthy and upfront and honest about saying this is the way people deal with each other. Now, one more time I got to point out. I'll get to you in a second. One more time I got to point out, for the Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated folks who want to say that it's because God knew what they were going to do. Have we seen Jacob deal honestly and forthrightly enough yet that we can say, well, yes, he's the good one. It's no wonder God chose him. No, the testimony is consistent in the Bible that God chooses sinful people. God chooses depraved people, but he chooses by his grace. And then he blesses them. Certainly, Jacob didn't deserve anything he got, but he got it because God chose him. You enjoying this? I'm really enjoying it. And Mike said to me last week, by the way, and I think this probably is the plan, it's still going to take us a long time to get out of Genesis because there's a lot of stuff to cover still in Genesis. But Mike asked me last week if I was going to continue into Exodus when we finish Genesis. And I think that's a good idea. We're just going to keep going because we will have built the story to that point where we'll go on into Exodus and end up with the Israelites back where they belong, back in the land of Canaan, the fulfillment of the promise made to Abraham at the beginning of the book of Genesis.
So
we could.
We
could have a Cecil B. DeMille night. We could watch him separate the Red Sea through the cunning use of gelatin.
Really? I mean,
miniature cameras and gelatin. Yeah.
So. Long before it was
yeah.
computer era.
Yeah. Anything else? I'm sorry, did I blow it for you? Oh.
Thank you for joining us for this week's lesson. If you would like more information about Grace Christian Assembly or the teaching of God's sovereign grace, please visit us on the World Wide Web at salvationbygrace.org.